From Ground Zero Radio, this is Democracy Now in Exile. A plane has crashed in the Rockaways in Queens, New York. It is not clear at this point what the cause is. It was American Airlines Flight 587. It had just taken off and was headed to Santo Domingo. It has created a major fire on the ground. We don't know how many casualties have occurred as of yet. And today is the 10th anniversary of the massacre of East Timor. Me.
I lost one sister and two brothers.
It was 10 days before I was to give birth. The army was shooting people, and they would die at our feet, but we couldn't stop to help them.
I know families that were totally wiped out.
All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now in Exile, the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. We have this news just in: major plane crash in New York. American Airlines Flight 587 that was taking off from Kennedy Airport on its way to Santo Domingo, an Airbus A300, has crashed in Queens. It is not clear what the cause. There was a major fire on board. It is not clear if it came from an explosion on board. The plane crashed into the Rockaways. A number of homes are on fire. Unclear how many people were on the plane. All three airports in the New York area, LaGuardia, Kennedy, and Newark airports, have been closed, and we'll continue to update you on this story as we learn about it. Meanwhile, in Afghanistan, opposition forces claiming to have the ruling Taliban on the run pressed their drive in northeastern Afghanistan this weekend. The opposition Northern Alliance, backed by intense U.S. bombing and logistical support from British and U.S. special forces on the ground, has moved steadily across northern Afghanistan since occupying the strategic city of Mazar-e-Sharif on Friday. As they appear to cement their control of northern cities, Northern Alliance commanders have discussed a possible offensive against the capital city of Kabul. This as U.S. bombers continue to carpet bomb Taliban positions north of the city. U.S. officials have told the alliance to stay out of the capital while they pursue discussions with alliance officials as well as Pakistan and other neighboring countries on what kind of administration to install there. But officials of the Northern Alliance have rejected arguments that they're unwelcome in Kabul, which was taken by the Taliban in 1996 after fighting among Northern Alliance warlords reduced the city to rubble and killed tens of thousands of civilians. A vote-by-vote review of untallied ballots in the 2000 Florida presidential election indicates that George W. Bush would have lost Florida and therefore the presidency had Al Gore pursued and gained a complete statewide recount. The new data, compiled by the Associated Press and seven other news organizations, suggests that Gore followed a legal strategy after Election Day that would have led to defeat even if the U.S. Supreme Court had not intervened to effectively give the state to Bush. Gore sought a recount of a relatively small portion of the state's disputed ballots, while the review indicates his only chance lay in a course he advocated publicly but did not pursue in court, a full statewide recount of all Florida's untallied votes. The media consortium hired the National Opinion Research Center at the University of Chicago to view each untallied ballot and gather information about how it was marked. The consortium used computers to sort and tabulate votes based on varying scenarios that had been raised during the post-election scramble in Florida. Completing two partial recounts that Gore unsuccessfully pursued in court showed Bush maintaining a lead ranging from 225 to 493 votes, meaning Bush still would have won if the U.S. Supreme Court had allowed a partial statewide recount to continue. but under any standard that tabulated all disputed votes statewide, Gore erased Bush's advantage and emerged with a tiny lead that ranged from 42 to 171 votes. The media consortium found that Gore outpolled Bush under six scenarios for counting all undervotes and overvotes statewide. The consortium delayed releasing the results of the study for over a month as the Bush administration declared war on Afghanistan. And right now, the latest news that we have coming out of the airplane crash, it looks like 44 fire trucks have been deployed to the Rockaways. 200 firefighters have been dispatched on board the American Airlines flight that took off from Kennedy Airport and was headed to Santo Domingo, where 246 passengers and 9 crew members. At this point, all 3 major airports in the New York City area, Newark, LaGuardia, and Kennedy, have been closed. Again, this was Flight 587, American Airlines flight to Santo Domingo, and it went down in the Rockaways in Queens. Not clear at this point what has caused this explosion, and we'll give you the latest as we learn it. The Washington Post is reporting that the American Red Cross collected hundreds of thousands of blood donations after September 11th, knowing that the blood could not be used for victims of the terrorist attacks. After selling some of the surplus blood to hospitals, the Red Cross has begun to destroy thousands of pints that have outlasted their shelf life. Directors of several Red Cross blood centers said their sites may discard as many as 1 of every 5 donations, and the national total could easily reach tens of thousands. Although the Red Cross told the public that surplus blood would be frozen, it did not have the resources to freeze large amounts of excess blood. And President Bush spoke to the United Nations this weekend, once again warning world leaders that they are either with the U.S. or they are with the terrorists. While everyone who spoke at the UN meeting condemned the September 11th attacks, many world leaders also expressed their opposition to the U.S. bombing of Afghanistan. Saudi Arabia's Prince Faisal also slammed the Bush administration for its backing of Israel and Bush's equation of Palestinian resistance to Israeli occupation as terrorism, saying it's enough to make a sane man go mad. And South African President Thabo Mbeki said it was obvious that the fundamental conflict in the world today is the deprivation of millions coexisting side by side with islands of enormous wealth and prosperity. And the latest news from here in New York, where we are broadcasting from, there has been a level 1 alert declared for all of New York City. Fire trucks can be heard being dispatched from downtown Manhattan. We're hearing them go by here at the firehouse. We are not functioning as a firehouse now. We are in Engine Company 31 in Chinatown. It used to be a firehouse. It is just blocks from what was the first Ground Zero, and that was where the towers of the World Trade Center once stood. Again, 44 fire trucks, 200 firefighters have been dispatched. All tunnels have been closed into New York City, and the major airports have been closed as a result of this. American Airlines flight 587 that has gone down in the Rockaways. Again, the number of people on board, more than 250. Stay with us. Edwin Starr singing War here on the War and Peace Report, the exception to the rulers. This is Resistance Radio. I'm Amy Goodman. We have a prepared show for you going back 10 years to the massacre at Santa Cruz in East Timor, where more than 270 Timorese were killed. And we're also dealing with late-breaking news that happened as we were broadcasting. CNN is confirming that the plane, the American Airlines jet that crashed today in the New York City borough of Queens, is American Airlines Flight 587 from New York, John F. Kennedy International Airport, to Santo Domingo, Dominican Republic. The plane was an Airbus A300. American Airlines did not immediately release the number of passengers on the flight. Smoke is extremely thick in the borough of Queens. There are two crash sites, one where the plane hit the ground and another where the engine, which was on fire, also hit. Hundreds of firefighters have been dispatched to the area. We actually hear fire trucks going by here. A New York police spokesman said the plane crashed in the Rockaways, at least four houses on fire. A huge plume of smoke can be seen rising from the site. All three New York City area airports, Kennedy, LaGuardia, and Newark, have been closed after the crash. Rudolph Giuliani, the mayor of New York, is declaring a level one emergency, mobilizing all available police, fire, and emergency personnel. Again, we do not know the cause of this crash. It was a report that there was a fire on board. The plane went down in the Rockaways. There was, at latest count, 246 passengers reported on board, 9 crew members on that flight. All tunnels into New York and the major airports in New York are closed, a level one alert for this city. And today we are talking about the issue of terrorism. Again, we don't know what has happened with this flight, what caused it, but we thought we'd go back in history, something the media doesn't do very well, and look at one story, a place that has also been called Ground Zero. The UN Security Council last week formally endorsed East Timor's plans to declare independence on May 20th of next year, pledging that the United Nations will remain engaged in the world's newest nation. East Timor's Constituent Assembly is writing the country's constitution and preparing for the day they will run their own affairs. In Dili, residents are holding a ceremony, as they do every November 12th, to commemorate the Santa Cruz massacre. 10 years ago today, Indonesian troops massacred at least 270 East Timorese in the Santa Cruz Cemetery in Dili, East Timor, as they engaged in a memorial service and a protest to honor another young man, Sebastio Gomez, who had been slain by the Indonesian military. The Indonesian troops who committed the massacre used US M16s provided by the US. The Indonesian military had been trained, armed, and financed by the US. We are joined on the telephone now by Matthew Jardine, who's written a very interesting piece comparing Ground Zeroes, Ground Zero East Timor, Ground Zero United States, just blocks from here. Matthew Jardine, as we're getting this latest news and trying to make sense of that and trying to bring our listeners the latest, can you go back and tell us what your comparison is about?
When the commentators began describing the World Trade Center in New York as Ground Zero, it immediately made me think of the last time I heard that term, which was in September 1999 in the aftermath of East Timor's vote for independence. When it became known that the people of East Timor had voted overwhelmingly in favor of independence, in favor of ending the Indonesian occupation, the Indonesian military and its militia proxies, or paramilitary proxies, began to launch a campaign of terror and destruction. And over a 3 to 4 week period, the Indonesian military destroyed about 70% of the country's buildings and infrastructure, deported about a third of the population to Indonesia forcibly. It's about 250,000 people. And by the way, tens of thousands of East Timorese remain forcibly held in Indonesia. And they raped untold numbers of women, in addition to massacring what is conservatively estimated to be 2,000 people. And when the international community returned to East Timor after being forced out by the Indonesian military, commentators began immediately to refer to East Timor as Ground Zero. Right? Now, the difference is between the Ground Zero in New York and the Ground Zero in East Timor. The one in New York took place over about a 20-minute period in terms of its making. And again, in East Timor, it took place over 3 to 4 weeks. And the other big difference is that the United States, of course, has tremendous financial resources to help recover from the devastation at Ground Zero, whereas East Timor, already one of the poorest places in the world prior to what took place in their country in September 1999, has very little to rebuild and recover from the devastation.
We're also joined on the telephone by Bella Gayos, who is an East Timorese student activist who sought asylum in Canada, returned to East Timor with Canadian troops in 1999, now works for UN Radio in Dili, where she hosts a radio program on women's issues. Welcome to the War and Peace Report, Bella Gayos.
Thank you.
It's great to have you with us. Can you tell us what happened today in Dili, East Timor, in remembrance of the massacre of 10 years ago?
Today, everybody in East Timor commemorated the 10 years of Dili massacre. It's quite a momentous day for everybody in this country, where people could easily go gather, have a big mass with no disturbance. And then the event was still taking place until even late, about 2 hours ago. Right now it's almost 12 o'clock. People, the whole country, actually Dili particularly, all the road was filled with candlelight just to remember those who have died 10 years ago.
Constancio Pinto is with us in the Firehouse studio, a former East Timorese resistance leader. Now, as East Timor moves to independence, he is a representative of the National Council of Timorese Resistance in Washington. It's great to have you with us, Constancio. I met Constancio 10 years ago, actually, in East Timor when you were working with the underground, with the resistance. And you were one of the major organizers of the November 12th procession that ultimately was fired upon by the Indonesian military. You were in hiding at that time. We met you the night before the massacre as you were getting word out to people, to international people like us. I was there with journalist Alan Nairn to let people know that this procession would take place. What are your thoughts today, 10 years later, in this age when the issue of terrorism is on everybody's mind?
Well, November 12th cannot be forgotten. You know, we have to remember it and all the time. And 2 days ago, I went back to my VCR and watched the movie, The Death of a Nation, to remember exactly what's happened in Santa Cruz Cemetery, and I found out that some of the people who we thought that they were killed were still survived, and that one of them is now in Lisbon. I wish he could be here also to talk about his experience during that drastic moment. I think for me, the reason why we are here today, we are almost got our full independence from UN is because of the Santa Cruz massacre. Santa Cruz massacre basically was the end of Indonesian occupation of East Timor, and I think because of that we got a lot of international community support all over the world, and which resulted in pressure on Indonesia to leave East Timor.
We're going to go back to that day by the tape recordings of that day. And the documentary did Massacre, the Story of East Timor. And we are also going to get the latest on what has happened in the plane crash. We, again, still have no word on the cause of this crash. There are reports that an engine was on fire. There was an explosion before the plane went down. This was an American Airlines flight that on this day, November 12th, had taken off from Kennedy. It was an Airbus A300 headed to the Dominican Republic with more than 250 people believed to be on board. There's a level one alert now in New York City. The plane has gone down in the Rockaways in Queens, causing a major fire on the ground and another major fire on the ground caused by the falling out of the engine. We're going to continue to follow both stories and talk about the issue of terrorism and why people feel the way they do around the world and what people are dealing with here at home. Stay with us. You're listening to the War and Peace Report. This music, Constancia, how do you pronounce it?
Hanano Korean.
And what is it?
It's an East Timorese song.
And today is the 10th anniversary of the massacre of East Timor, in which Indonesian troops, armed, financed, and trained by the U.S. military, gunned down more than 250 Timorese. One of the smaller massacres in Timor, more than a third of the population was killed in East Timor. As we talk about issues of terror and state terrorism, we are broadcasting from a firehouse blocks from Ground Zero. Right now outside, we're hearing planes go overhead. We're hearing fire trucks pass by. And we are bringing you the latest news we have on a plane that went down as it took off of Kennedy Airport on its way to the Santo Domingo, Dominican Republic. More than 250 people on board. New York City is on a level one alert at this point, although the Pentagon is saying that there is no connection to terrorism as of now with this American Airlines Flight 587 that has gone down in the Rockaways. The latest news we have, there are two crash sites, one where the plane went down, a major fire, and one where the engine fell off the plane. There are military jets flying over the area. At least 12 buildings are burning in the Rockaways. Apparently, the plane, the American Airlines flight, lost radio communication shortly after takeoff, and it looked like it was trying to circle around to come back to JFK. No word yet on the number of casualties. Commentators are talking about now is an engine fell off the plane, and it fell separately from the jetliner. And at this point, as the plane has gone down and crashed in Queens and the Rockaways, there are all three airports, LaGuardia, Newark, and Kennedy, have been shut. The George Washington Bridge has been closed to traffic, and all major tunnels coming into the city have been closed. So that's the latest news we have here on the ground. We're going to continue with our program as we look back and talk about terror and state terror, 10 years ago and today. We're joined on the phone from Dili by Bella Gayos. She is an East Timorese activist who has a radio program on women's issues. Bella, can you describe where you were 10 years ago today?
Well, you know, the flashback, the memory at the time was quite an emotional feeling. Today, the feeling is a bit different. I guess people understand more why we fight so hard, you know, why young people like myself and the young generation were so brave to stood up for their rights and fighting this invasion and occupation of Indonesia in our country. And I guess there was an open-minded to the world, to the international community, to really see what's going on in East Timor. And all this have make it clear now that what we are still trying to here in East Timor, we're still trying very hard to working with the development and reconstruction of our country, the result of what the world has never believed us for the last 24 years. So I hope that it's going to be a big lesson. And really, once again, would like to emphasize that this kind of a mistake will never, hopefully never happen again and never be repeated.
We're going to go to the sounds of the massacre, to what happened on that day 10 years ago. Just a clip from the documentary Alan Aaron and I did a year after the massacre, having come back from East Timor, called Massacre, the Story of East Timor.
Journalist Alan Aaron and I returned to East Timor last fall in order to be present for a historic event. A special delegation from the United Nations and Portugal was due to visit East Timor. The Timorese hoped the visit would finally lead to UN action and enforcement of the Security Council resolutions calling on Indonesia to withdraw from East Timor.
We were told in place after place that the army had been holding neighborhood and village meetings to warn the Timorese that if they tried to speak to the UN Portuguese delegation, they and their families would be killed. And Bishop Bello, the Bishop of East Timor, told us that the threat was, we will kill your family to the seventh generation.
But despite the threats and a dramatic increase in disappearances, torture, and deaths, Timorese had prepared to speak out. They had met in secret, making banners and petitions for the delegation. When the army tried to hunt them down, many had gone into hiding and sought refuge inside churches. But under pressure from the United States, the visit of the delegation had been called off. 3 days later, with the world spotlight removed, the army stormed the Motayal, Dili's main Catholic church, and killed a young man named Sebastio Gomez, who had taken refuge there. And then came the morning of November 12th, the two-week commemoration of Sebastio's funeral. A memorial mass and procession were planned to lay flowers on Sebastio's grave. After the mass was held at the Motayal, people, young and old, came out into the street, and in a land where public speech and assembly had been forbidden for over a decade, they started chanting. The Timorese then held up banners drawn on bedsheets. They had been prepared for the delegation that never came. The banners called on Indonesia to leave East Timor and said things like, why the Indonesian army shoot our church? The Timorese were facing a gauntlet of troops that stretched the length of Dili. It was the boldest act of public protest occupied Timor had ever seen.
More and more Timorese joined the procession. They came from huts and schools and offices along the way. And there was this building feeling of exhilaration as well as fear among the Timorese. And when they reached the cemetery, the crowd had swelled to maybe 5,000 people. Some went inside to lay flowers on Sebastião's grave. Most of the crowd was still outside. And then suddenly someone looked up and we saw that marching up along the same route that the Timorese had come, came a long column of Indonesian troops, dressed in brown, holding M16s in front of them, marching in a very slow, deliberate fashion, hundreds and hundreds of troops coming straight at the Timorese.
Alan suggested we walk to the front of the crowd between the soldiers and the Timorese, because although we knew that the army had committed many massacres, we hoped that we as foreign journalists could serve as a shield for the Timorese. Standing with headphones on and microphone and camera out in full view, we went and stood in the middle of the road, looking straight at the approaching troops. Behind us, the crowd was hushed as some Timorese tried to turn away, but they were hemmed in by cemetery walls.
The soldiers marched straight up to us. They never broke their stride. We were enveloped by the troops, and when they got a few yards past us, within a dozen yards of the Timorese, they raised their rifles to their shoulders all at once, and they opened fire. The Timorese, in an instant, were down. It was torn apart by the bullets. The street was covered with bodies, covered with blood, and the soldiers just kept on coming. They poured in, one rank after another. They leaped over the bodies of those who were down. They were aiming and shooting people in the back. I could see their limbs being torn, their bodies exploding. There was blood spurting out into the air, the pop of the bullets everywhere. And it was very organized, very systematic. The soldiers did not stop. They just kept on shooting until no one was left standing.
A group of soldiers grabbed my microphone and threw me to the ground, kicking and punching me. At that point, Alan threw himself on top of me, protecting me from further injury. The soldiers then used their rifle butts like baseball bats, beating Alan until they fractured his skull. As we sat on the ground, Alan covered in blood, a group of soldiers lined up and pointed their M16s at our heads. They had stripped us of all of our equipment. We just kept shouting, "We're from America." In the end, they decided not to execute us.
The soldiers beat us, but we actually had received privileged treatment. We were still alive. They kept on firing into the Timorese. We were able to get onto a passing civilian truck, went into hiding, but the Timorese who had been with us there on the cemetery road, most of them were dead.
Inside the cemetery walls, Max Stahl, a filmmaker on assignment with Yorkshire TV, had had his video camera running.
The soldiers began at that point to encircle the entire cemetery. I saw soldiers as they gradually moved towards the middle, picking out people who were wounded or taking refuge between the tombstones. And when they got to them, they beat them and assembled them in the back of the cemetery. People were stripped to their waist. They had their thumbs tied behind their backs. And they were made to look at the ground. And if they looked up, they were immediately beaten, usually with a rifle butt.
Max Stahl was filming near a crypt in the middle of the cemetery. Some of the wounded and those too scared to run were huddled inside praying. As Stahl filmed, he buried his video cassettes in a fresh grave. Then he was arrested by the troops.
Whilst I was being interrogated, I observed these trucks driving by with more people in them. These people were clearly in a kind of paralysis of fear. They were not able to move, some of them, at least in the cemetery, and indeed even in the trucks when I saw them going by, were barely breathing. When people are that terrified, it's quite often difficult to tell if they're dead or alive.
After 9 hours in custody, Stahl went back to the cemetery under cover of night, dug up his video cassettes, and had them smuggled out of the country. Alan Nairn and I had managed to leave East Timor a few hours after the massacre. From a hospital on Guam, we reported what had happened to dozens of newspapers, radio, and television outlets around the world.
From Washington, this is the Pacifica Report for Tuesday, November 12, 1991. A massacre in East Timor. Among those injured were two journalists, including the news editor of Pacifica station WBAI in New York.
They beat me and dragged me over and started slamming me with rifle butts and kicks and punches, and then Alan jumped on top of me, and they beat him very badly. But that was the least of what they did. They opened fire on the people, and these were truly...
日本政府はインドネシアに真相究明を申し入れ
when Indonesian troops opened fire on a crowd...
This is CBC Radio.
The massacre of 100 unarmed Timorese by the Indonesian military...
Imagens do primeiro, photographs of a bloody massacre during a fight for freedom.
A portion of Massacre, the story of East Timor, about the massacre that occurred 10 years ago today, November 12, 1991. We're joined in the studio by a guest from Dili, East Timor, Belagayos, Joe Nevins, on the line with us from California, and Constancio Pinto, one of the leaders of the Timorese underground at that time, now a leader, representative of the Timorese government in Washington, D.C. Constancio, as we listen to what took place on that one day, more than 270 Timorese killed on that day by an army, the Indonesian army, using U.S. weapons. The Indonesian occupation of Timor lasted almost 25 years, begun under Suharto, one of the longest reigning dictators in the world. When we talk about issues of terror and what has happened to the people of Timor, your people, a third of the population, what about, for example, a war crimes tribunal? Where is East Timor on that issue?
Well, we keep pushing for a war criminal tribunal for East Timor. And as you know, at this moment, we have a serious crime section, which is set up by the UNTAED. It is now trying
UNTAED
to
being UNTAED, the
United Nations administration, civil administration for East Timor. So we brought a number of people to try, especially East Timorese people who involved in the in serious crimes 1999 mayhem. But also, it seems to me that we will extend this to Indonesian generals who were responsible for the massacres in 1991 and also 1999. But it is very difficult to go about because it all depends on also the cooperation of the Indonesian government with the international community.
What about the U.S. officials that supported the Indonesian military? I mean, going back to when Ford and Kissinger gave the go-ahead for the invasion of Timor, and then even when State Department officials under Kissinger wrote to him that the invasion in 75 was extremely bloody, that Congress would probably cut off aid to Indonesia, he told them to be quiet and said, we must not kick our ally in the teeth and not to leave a paper trail. Do you believe that they should be brought before a war crimes tribunal?
Well, there's no question about the U.S. involvement in the invasion of East Timor. Kissinger and President Ford both were in Indonesia in 1975, hours before the Indonesian invasion of East Timor. But talking about bringing the U.S. to the international to war criminal tribunal, well, this is not, I think we don't have any power to do this. We, means the East Timorese. And because of that, Sinanak Guzman also often said that it is in the hands of international community to judge who the U.S. or international or the Western involvement in the invasion of East Timor.
Joan Evans, it's interesting as the U.S. bombs Afghanistan and talks about bringing Osama bin Laden to justice. It's been the U.S. that has opposed an international criminal court. Can you talk a little more about that in relation to East Timor?
That's right. I mean, the U.S. not only has opposed an international criminal court, but has done little to nothing to ensure that there be accountability for the people of East Timor, not only for the ground zero that occurred there in September 1999, but for the preceding 24 years of atrocities committed by the Indonesians. In January 2000, an International Commission of Inquiry in East Timor, a UN body, recommended that to the Security Council that there be established some sort of international tribunal to try gross human rights crimes committed in East Timor. But the United States and its allies in the Security Council instead deferred to Indonesia and allowed Indonesia to try its own, to prosecute its own. Well, it's been almost 2 years since that. The International Commission of Inquiry recommended the establishment of a tribunal, and there has not been an indictment of a single Indonesian military official by the Indonesian judicial system for crimes committed in East Timor. Now, even if the Indonesian process were to go forward, right, what we're talking about, if it were to be successful, would be the prosecution of only a handful of war criminals, of people who have committed crimes against humanity, because the Indonesian process envisions prosecution for crimes committed only in April and September 1999 and only crimes committed in 3 of East Timor's 13 districts, right? So the other 12 districts wouldn't be touched. The other months in 1999, forget about anything happening prior to 1999. So it's for that reason that there really needs to be a serious push, especially in the United States, to realize an international tribunal. Now, interestingly enough, in the days following the September 11th attacks against the World Trade Center and the Pentagon, among the first visitors to Washington, D.C. were Australian Prime Minister John Howard, Indonesia's new president, Megawati Sukarno-Putri, and then Washington's lead cheerleader for the current war effort against Afghanistan, British Prime Minister Tony Blair. Now, what all these heads of state have in common, along with President G.W. Bush, is that they lead countries that were all guilty, either directly or indirectly, in the making of Ground Zero in East Timor in September 1999 and the invasion and occupation that took place over a much longer period of time. Now, these are the same countries that are now advocating for a vigorous war against terrorism. In the case of the United States and Britain and Australia, they're actually making a war in Afghanistan. But these same countries, vis-a-vis their own crimes in East Timor, of course, not surprisingly, have little to nothing to say.
For the record, let's go for a minute to the tape. Well back in 1975, when U.S. approved Indonesia's invasion of East Timor again, then President Ford, Secretary of State Henry Kissinger, went to Indonesia and met with one of the longest reigning dictators in the world, General Suharto. This is what Ford, the former U.S. president, had to say.
Our relationship involves a common concern for the right of every nation to pursue its destiny on its own independent and sovereign course. On behalf of Mrs. Ford and myself, I raise my glass and propose a toast.
That was former U.S. President Ford. Your response, Joe?
Well, history knows what happened after that. It was just less than 24 hours later, I believe, that Indonesian military entered Dili through a brutal invasion, December 7th, 1975. December 7th, of course, in the United States is known as a day that will live in infamy, the attack on Pearl Harbor. But it should live in infamy in the United States also for other reasons, because of U.S. complicity and one of the great crimes against humanity in the 20th century.
Well,
interestingly enough, Henry Kissinger, of course, as you mentioned, was present in East Timor, in Indonesia with Ford when the green light was given for the invasion. 24 years later, the ambassador to Indonesia was a man by the name of Stapleton Roy. And as the Indonesian military and its paramilitary proxies were engaging in the destruction and campaign of terror in East Timor that resulted in Ground Zero in September 1999, Stapleton Roy was asked to explain why Washington and other Western capitals weren't doing anything to stop the carnage. And he responded as follows. This is a quote. "The dilemma is that Indonesia matters and East Timor doesn't," end quote. What Roy does now, Stapleton Roy, he's the managing director of Kissinger Associates, a consulting firm, I believe based in New York City, founded by Henry Kissinger. So the circle of crime has come full circle.
Well, on that note, I want to thank you all for being with us. Also, letting people know in the New York area, Constancio and I, along with Michael Ratner, will be tonight, on Monday night, at Forum Justice for East Timor, 10 years after the Santa Cruz Massacre, and that's at 7:30 at 147 West 70th Street near Columbus, talking about the Santa Cruz Massacre. And Constancio Pinto has come up from Washington, D.C. and Belagayo, so I want to thank you very much for joining us from Dili, East Timor. The latest news we have of the plane crash, again, the Pentagon at this point is saying we do not know that this has anything to do with terrorism. Everyone is, to say the least, very jittery, but there has been a major plane crash in New York. It happened in the Rockaways. A plane, an American Airlines flight headed to the Dominican Republic, has gone down just after it left Kennedy Airport, Flight 587. Apparently more than 250 passengers and crew on board. As a result of this plane going down, apparently there was an explosion first before the plane went down. The engine fell off separately from the plane, causing two major fires in the Rockaways in Queens. A number of buildings are burning. Hundreds of firefighters have been dispatched. There are military planes flying overhead. Mayor Rudolph Giuliani has declared a level one alert here in New York City. It was an A300 Airbus that left Kennedy Airport on its way to the Dominican Republic. All tunnels coming into New York have been closed. The George Washington Bridge has been closed. The UN has partially been closed down at this point. Here in New York, we are on high alert, although we do not know what the cause of this plane crash has been, and we'll continue to bring you the latest. You are listening to the War and Peace Report. When we return, we're going to go to an anti-war rally that was held on Saturday night in Boston at the Orpheum Theater. It was a major speech given by Ralph Nader, along with union activists and others, talking about life as we know it after September 11th. And we'll bring you the latest news as we learn of it here in the firehouse in Chinatown, just blocks from the first Ground Zero, where the towers of the World Trade Center once stood. We'll bring you the latest on what's happening in Queens, New York, with that crash. Stay with us.
Whether you're infected by greed, if you have to ask, then this song you really need. Greed is sneaky, hard to detect in myself. I see it so clearly in everybody else. I've been trying to find a way to talk about greed. I've been trying to find a way to talk about greed. I've been wondering if I could sing about greed. Trying to find a way to talk about greed. Now I can see it in you. You can see it in me. We can see it in big corporations all throughout the government. See it in the banks. I can see it in the military. See it in the church. I can see it in my neighbor. It all shows up so clearly. You and you and your greed. I've been trying to find a way to talk about greed. I've been trying to find a way to talk about greed. I've been wondering if I could sing about greed. Trying to find a way to talk about greed. I'm trying to find a way to talk about greed. Trying to find a way.
Talking about greed. Sweet Honey in the Rock here on the War and Peace Report. This is Resistance Radio. I'm Amy Goodman. Again, the latest news, a plane has crashed in Queens. It is an American Airlines Flight 587 headed to the Dominican Republic. More than 250 people were on board. There's a level one alert in New York City. Fire trucks from all over the city have descended on the Rockaways where the plane went down. Two major fire sites, one where the engine went down, one where the plane went down. The United Nations has been partially closed. All the tunnels into the city have been closed. All three major airports, Newark Airport, LaGuardia Airport, and Kennedy, have been closed. We do not know the cause of this crash. Apparently, the plane lost contact soon after leaving Kennedy Airport. Looked like it was trying to circle back, and then it went down. We will continue to bring you the latest, but right now we're going to turn to Gary Nielsen, who is Vice President of Communication Workers America from Andover, Massachusetts. He spoke to thousands of people at an event at Orpheum Theater in Boston, where Ralph Nader spoke as well, talking about life after September 11th and talking about the state of the economy from a worker's perspective. This is Gary Nielsen.
I'm more used to standing on the street in front of a factory and with a megaphone, so this forum is a little bit out of touch for me, so you have to bear with me a little bit. But we'll start right in. Immediately following September 11th tragedy, another tragedy more profound happened. And that tragedy was the assault on the working people in this country and around the world. Today, businesses in the Bush White House are using the September 11th tragedy to push forward their assaults against working people. They have proclaimed that the renewed assaults on working people is the patriotic thing to do. They have labeled anyone who dare stand or speak out against these assaults against working people are anti-American and unpatriotic. And I assure you tonight, the only unpatriotic actions is to stand by and do nothing while we watch our jobs, livelihoods, incomes be destroyed, outsourced, and taken away. Thank you. We watched as more than 100,000 airline workers lose their jobs, and Congress gives the airline industry $15 billion and nothing, nothing to workers. $15 billion for 4 days of lost operations and nothing to the workers who will lose their jobs forever. We watch as more than 500,000 workers lose their jobs around this country since September 11th, and Congress passes a corporate tax rebate package that would give companies billions of dollars of our money and nothing to workers. We watch as businesses in the Bush White House push forward this fast-tracked idea. Fast-tracked, the most undemocratic way of passing legislation, is being brought forward because it's a patriotic thing to do. And I will tell you here today, fast-track legislation is against everything we know as democratic. And we must not be fooled into believing it is good for the working people. It is bad. Thank you. Fast-track will move these trade agreements forward to becoming law. Trade agreements that have no work or environmental protections written into them. These trade agreements that only protect business interests at the expense of workers and the environment. These trade agreements that have already cost us hundreds of thousands of jobs and will cost us hundreds of thousands of more. Decent living wage jobs move to other countries where companies can pay workers pennies a day. Violate the most basic workers' rights and create more poverty in the countries where these businesses set up shop. These trade agreements do nothing to offer decent employment, maintain living wage jobs, or bring people out of poverty. The only act to destroy workers, destroy families, and put children into factories and violate our environment. We must not accept any trade agreements that do not include enforceable worker and human rights and environmental protections. We must not be fooled into believing that accepting these agreements and legislation is the patriotic thing to do. We must not be fooled into believing that business interests are our interests, because they are not. We must not be fooled into believing that speaking out and having an opinion is anti-American. Because after all, America was founded and built on the idea that all people have a voice and all people have an opinion. And I say to you today, that to try and silence us is the most unpatriotic and anti-American thing to do. I thank you.
And that was Gary Nielsen of the Communication Workers of America speaking at a Ralph Nader rally for democracy on Saturday night at the Orpheum Theater in Boston. Thousands of activists gathered there. We're going to go to an insurance fraud expert talking about September 11th and who is benefiting in just a minute. And as we go to that, I just want to give people the latest. Again, an American Airlines jet with 255 people on board crashed today, this morning at about 9:17 in a residential neighborhood after taking off from New York's John F. Kennedy Airport, flight 587, went down on its way to the Dominican Republic. It lost contact with the with air control just after it took off, and we're now going to go to back to the rally to hear Jason Adkins talk about insurance and insurance fraud.
I spend my living suing insurance companies. There's no shortage of work. Let me tell you, the insurance industry wants the public to think insurance is boring. You say the word insurance, you're supposed to turn off. We need you to turn on, because that's what affects the economy, every one of our lives, and health insurance and workers' coverage for injuries. And that's where $3 trillion of workers' monies are and consumers' monies are. We need to keep an eye on the insurance industry. They're looking for a multi-billion dollar handout from the federal government right now. The last time I heard, they believed in the free market. Every time you look for consumer protections, it's the free market. And now suddenly it's $10, $20, $40 billion of handouts. It can't stand. Now they have a bad reputation because they like to take money in and they don't like to pay it out. I mean, is anybody surprised that within a couple days of the World Trade Center fiasco and disaster, the insurers actually filed suit to avoid paying claims in that matter? It gets worse, although maybe not worse than that. Let me tell you what's going on locally, and I have only 3 minutes to describe for every minute a $3 billion aspect of this scandal. It's $10 billion a scam. It involves Liberty Mutual Insurance Company. That's an exciting name. But what is Liberty Mutual Insurance Company? It's 90 years old. It was started by workers and farmers to protect themselves and to return all profits to lower their cost of insurance and to make sure that Liberty Mutual, which is the largest underwriter of workers in case they're injured on the job, to make sure that those people would be compensated. There's a power grab going on, and the executives want to follow the tradition of the savings and loans and the banks that converted in the last 10 years and left communities, local communities without local banks, bought up by the fleets of the world, in which communities got nothing for literally millions of dollars in investments they made in those local community banks.
We're going to bring you more of Jason Adkins tomorrow on Democracy Now! We did not, to say the least, expect the interruptions that we've had today of breaking news throughout the morning. Again, the latest news we have this morning at 9:17, plane American Airlines Flight 587 crashed in Queens in the Rockaways with more than 255 people on board. It is unclear what caused this. The Pentagon says there at this point is no link to terrorism. The Federal Aviation Administration said all options are open at this time. We have very little information, limited information. Pentagon said surveillance flights were going on in the area. Nothing unusual had been spotted, but the plane did go down with more than 255 people. The UN is on partial lockdown. Tunnels into New York have been closed. Three major area airports, Newark, LaGuardia, and Kennedy, have been closed, and we'll keep you updated on the latest news. But that does it for today's program. Democracy Now! In Exile, produced by Brad Simpson, Miranda Kennedy, and Chris Abrams. Anthony Sloan is our engineer and music maestro. You can email us at mail@democracynow.org. We're broadcasting from the Firehouse Engine 31, just blocks from the first Ground Zero, where the towers of the World Trade Center once stood. We are at Downtown Community Television. And we will be back on the air tomorrow with the latest news of what has taken place today. I'm Amy Goodman, broadcasting in exile from WBAI, in exile from the embattled studios, in exile from the studios of the Band and the Fired, from the studios of our listeners. Thanks for listening. Where we are born, we are
Love they don't have.